We cross now to the Beehive.
Get us moving again and how we can leverage our strong health response to COVID to create some economic advantage for New Zealand going forward. But first, I'll hand over to Dr. Bloomfield for his health update.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Kia ora koutou katoa. So today we have two new cases of COVID-19 to report. This comprises one confirmed and one probable case. The confirmed case is linked to the Marist College cluster. The person who has tested positive for COVID-19 is a student who has been, like the rest of New Zealand, in lockdown under Alert Level 3 and then under the Alert Level 3 restrictions. Lockdown under Alert Level 4 and then under Level 3 since March the 20th. They had been contacted by Healthline in the first week of April as part of the contact tracing and were not unwell at that time, so did not progress to testing at this stage. So as part of the broader testing of Marist students and staff as they head back to school, around 250 people have been tested so far. This is the only positive result from that group. The student has what we would call a weak positive test and is almost certainly late in the course of an infection. The significance of the weak positive result so late in the course of the illness, when the symptoms that the student reported were actually some weeks ago, it's not fully understood, and it's likely the person is not infectious at this stage. And this is a pattern we have seen in some of our recent cases and also has been observed internationally. And the South Koreans have done a study on a group like this and subsequently followed that up with a study that suggested that this was the result of some viral fragments still being detected by the testing, but not that the people were infective. So saying, we are taking a precautionary approach, as we should, and the student will remain in isolation and be retested in a week's time. I think this case that's been discovered through this testing across the Marist community shows the importance of that sort of testing, and I'd encourage others from the Marist College community to go and be tested if they haven't as yet. The other case we are reporting, the probable case, is linked to the St Margaret's Hospital and Rest Home cluster, and this is a household contact of a known case. It's a probable case because the person has symptoms but has been tested as negative but still considered to have had COVID-19. It will be important to understand the transmission path of any cases we do find in coming days, as we've said before, and our teams are working very closely with public health units to ensure that we get that information as quickly as possible. So the total number of New Zealand's COVID-19 cases is 1,488. And 1,138 of those are confirmed, and we will be reporting that number through to the WHO. There are 88% of all confirmed probable and confirmed cases are now considered recovered. We have two people in hospital today. One is in Auckland City and one in Middlemore Hospital, and neither are in ICU. Sadly, today I have another COVID-19 related death to report. This is associated with the cluster at the Rosewood Rest Home and Hospital. The person who has passed away is a woman in her 60s. She had underlying health conditions and was considered a probable case of COVID-19 due to her clinical presentation and past exposure history, despite testing negative. This woman has been at Rosewood since 2011 and was a much-loved member of the Rosewood family. And I'm pleased to say, and you will, I'm sure, join me in understanding that a staff member was comforting her when she passed away. She was not one of the residents who had been transferred to Burwood Hospital, but was still at Rosewood. Our thoughts, of course, go out to her family and her friends today in the days and weeks and months ahead. Regarding our testing, there were 4,772 tests processed yesterday, bringing our total to 160,700 tests. There are no new clusters, and as I've reported previously, three clusters are now closed. So, finally, our low numbers of COVID-19 cases continues to be encouraging, but we are by no means out of the woods. We need everyone to stick to the plan and continue to follow the rules around Alert Level 3. And not doing so does risk undoing all the good work we have achieved so far. We have seen how quickly this virus can spread, both here and in other countries. So do not give it an inch. Thank you, Prime Minister.
Thank you, Director General. Some of you will be aware of the news announced by Microsoft this morning that it is set to make a significant investment to establish a data centre region in New Zealand for its cloud services. I do note that this is subject to normal regulatory approvals. However, this is a hugely welcome development, not least for job opportunities in the near term for our construction industry, in the longer term for our ICT industry and local innovators, but because it serves as a signal to the world that New Zealand is open for business and quality investment. Our decision to go hard and go early on the health front for COVID-19 has been our best economic response. Now it's about positioning New Zealand to recover and building on investment opportunities such as this one. More broadly, it is my view that by tackling the virus, we have positioned our economy to be able to rebuild ahead of many others globally. That is our safe haven strategic advantage. International companies like Microsoft wouldn't be investing here or looking to invest here if they didn't have full confidence in the New Zealand economy, that we are ready to welcome quality investment and offer a safe place for operation in both a health and business sense. Today's announcement also represents a vote of confidence in New Zealand's digital future. It means the government and New Zealand businesses and New Zealanders will be able to access the scale and security of cloud services offered by a major global provider in a way that hasn't been done before here in New Zealand. I have two other pieces of economic news that I would just like to note as well. Trade Minister David Parker has announced that the 21 APEC economies have committed to working together to ensure trade and investment continues to flow to help counter the economic impact of COVID-19. This will promote a more stable trading environment for our food exporters and will also help provide reliable access to medical supplies. To quote the Minister, in these troubled times, our region has recognised how important it is to act in concert to keep supply chains open and trade flowing, especially in essential goods and services. And employment figures released this morning by Statistics New Zealand, while covering the period before the worst of the COVID-19 impact, show the economy's underlying strength heading into this global pandemic. In the 3 months to the end of March, the number of employed people rose by 19,000, while the number of unemployed was up by 5,000. The employment rate rose to 67.5%, while the unemployment rate also rose slightly from 4 to 4.2%, remaining near its lowest levels in a decade. Obviously, a huge amount has changed in the last 6 weeks in New Zealand, and this global one in 100 year health and economic crisis will contribute to unemployment rising. Of that, there is no doubt. But we will continue to support people, to help protect jobs, to help grow jobs, and help support people's incomes. Fittingly, our Kiwi Ingenuity story for today is a business story from the west coast of the South Island, where people are working together to make sure that they are supporting one another. I recently had a letter from Development West Coast to let me know that a coordinated effort was brought together an online directory of 180 local businesses that are back operating under Level 3. There's also help for small and medium businesses in the form of a rebate of $5 per delivery, up to a maximum of $250 per establishment, to help offset some of the costs associated with running a delivery service or using a courier service. www.nowopen.co.nz is a great initiative and a platform built in collaboration with Epic Westport, a PGF-funded digital hub. And I say well done to them. I'm ready for questions.
Prime Minister, did you have a chance to hear the submissions at committee today?
No, on account of often the overlap between cabinet committees and the epidemic committee. But I do make a habit of getting a readout and feedback from those who are appearing and sharing testimony at the committee.
I could just run you through a few of the things that we heard and bear with me. There was a woman with breast cancer who was left financially vulnerable because she had paid for her own mastectomy. There was a woman who learnt of a miscarriage on her own hospital while her husband was in the hospital car park. There was a mother who learnt that she had terminal cancer. We heard of a mother who learnt she had terminal cancer over the phone. We heard the story of another mother whose enduring image of her son will be when he was taken away by paramedics after taking his own life and wasn't able to have a funeral. Do you recognise that there is a real urgency to address the hurt and harm that's being caused?
Yes.
Going to do about it?
Well, you will have seen all the way through this, every time there's been a death, every time there's been a traumatic experience that someone has had, because ultimately we've had to make decisions to try and protect people's health. We have never discounted the impact that's having on people's lives. Some of the stories I've heard today, though, don't fit with our expectations that we had. No one should birth alone. Everyone should have been able to have a support person with them through that experience. So there are some stories and testimonies that I'm sure the Director General will want to be looking at, because there are some expectations that I don't think have been met from what we've heard today.
Not at all.
Just the implementation. Because I don't think anyone would think that even in these extraordinary times, that would be reasonable. Yes, of course, in the period thereafter, there has been the ongoing risk of having visitors coming and going and what that presented for patients. But when it comes to, for instance, someone having a baby, no one should go through that experience alone.
That woman and all of those others, though, it just feels totally out of control. Like, where is the compassion?
What I've just expressed is the expectation that we have. Some of those experiences shouldn't be had alone, and it was our expectation that they shouldn't be happening alone.
Will the government take, just on a case-by-case basis, actually take a bit more care and consideration in considering those exemptions and considering whether or not people can have...
Again, as I've already said, for instance, there already is an expectation that no one should birth alone. What we're hearing is sometimes the experience of what's happened in individual DHBs. And at that level, decisions are being made often by clinicians. So it's probably best for me to hand over to Dr. Bloomfield on that.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Yes, so I got to hear most of one testimony and all of the last testimony before I answered questions at the committee. And the point I made is it's very important to hear these stories and understand the impact on individuals and their whānau. These are things that we will use to inform not just our approach as we move through and down the alert levels, but also updating our policies in case we have to move up through alert levels. Mm. And I guess the point I did want to make is, you know, what we always aspire to, whether it's a pandemic situation or not, is it should be consistent as appropriate and different as appropriate. And ultimately, that comes down to clinical decisions and discussions between individuals and their whānau and clinicians. But we will be looking to make sure that where there is every reasonable expectation of consistency, that will be the case.
People?
I didn't personally fail them. No, I don't think the government did. And what's important, though, is that we have heard those testimonies and that we work with the district health boards to get a good understanding of just what happened in those situations and use them as a learning experience. And I know that they will be paying careful attention because they will have been listening as well.
One of the other things to keep in mind, of course, these are in and of themselves potentially very traumatic events that are even made more traumatic by the fact that they've happened during a global pandemic when the country has been in lockdown. What our duty of care is to try and reduce that burden as much as we can. And as the Director General has said, there are cases where it doesn't sound like we've done that to the best of our ability. We have to be willing to go back and learn from that.
That same select committee heard from the Cancer Society about screening. Screening was off the table during the lockdown. Mm. They're concerned that hundreds could die in the coming months or coming years due to cancer because it wasn't caught during the lockdown. What's been done to mitigate that risk?
So, first of all, in terms of screening, yes, no cancer screening was done during the lockdown, but that is now up and going again. And so I'd like to encourage anyone who does get an invitation for screening to take that up. And it's important that we do deliver screening services as part of our cancer prevention and early detection. Second thing I think Dr. Jackson was talking about was the need to catch up rapidly on undertaking assessments and diagnostics on people who may have symptoms and maybe need to be investigated. And that's one of the things the District Health Boards are looking at very promptly, working both with us and with the new Cancer Control Agency, with Professor Safaiti, who's the interim CE there. So there's a very big focus on getting those people in to be assessed and to get any tests and investigations they need as quickly as possible.
Can you guarantee, though, that there won't be loss of life because of this lockdown and the lack of cancer screening?
What I can say is I have no doubt that those who deliver cancer services are more committed than anyone to making sure that people get timely assessment and investigation to ensure that any possible harm that might have accrued because of the lockdown is averted. So I think that, well, the other thing I can say is, and I know that 80% of the cancer surgery that would have expected to have happened during that lockdown has happened, and that clinicians are working very carefully with the Cancer Control Agency to ensure that people are prioritised to avoid any harm arising.
That's my understanding, that the vast majority of cancer surgery continued. And I believe bowel screening, bowel screening is by post, so there's a different set of circumstances for bowel screening.
That's right. The actual faecal-occult blood test is done through the mail.
Mm. Okay, just coming through. Yep.
To General of Health Ashley Bloomfield and Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern taking press questions. You can always listen to them in their entirety online, rnz.co.nz. Bloomfield announcing two new cases of COVID-19 today, both of them, by the sounds of things, associated with existing clusters. And sadly, one more death at Rosewood Rest Home, a woman in her 60s. Prime Minister Ardern talking about business and the economy mostly in her statement today. She talked about Microsoft, the computing company's announcement that they will be building a cloud data centre in New Zealand. In her opinion, shows that New Zealand is, quote, open for business, and also talking about some work that APEC was doing to get business and economies working again.